The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to visit a pelican's paradise on Smith Island, Maryland. Now, the article is written by Andrea Sachs and appeared in the July 1, 2022 issue of the Washington Post. A photo caption provides a quick overview of Andrea's theme. Nesting brown pelicans started to appear around the Chesapeake Bay about 25 years ago, having relocated from North Carolina's Outer Banks. So we've got a Tar Heel connection, don't we? Well, let's go to her story now and learn more. On a sunny mid-June afternoon with a tickling breeze, dozens of brown pelicans soared overhead like an avian cirque du soleil. Some birds carried nesting materials in their comically long bills. Others scanned the light chop for a meal. On shore, expectant parents tended to their eggs, standing as still as statues. While the performers swirled around him, Wes Bradshaw remembered a time when there were no pelicans on the Chesapeake Bay, a period that covered about three-quarters of the waterman's life on Smith Island, Maryland. I had seen pictures of them, but I didn't see my first one till 25 years ago, the 77-year-old retired crabber said from inside the skiff he uses to transport guests to the island's pelican rookery. Now I enjoy looking for them and seeing what they're up to. The arrival of nesting East Coast brown pelicans on the Chesapeake Bay, the northernmost point in their spring migration, is an uplifting chapter in the often bleak tale of climate change and declining wildlife diversity. Though pelicans and their deep throat pouches have existed for nearly 3 million years, they do not appear in the Eastern Shore's historical records. Neither the region's Native Americans nor explorer John Smith, who mapped out the waterway in 1608, mentioned the prehistoric-looking bird. "It's a recent thing," said Jim Rapp, an avid birder and conservationist who leads pelican tours on Smith Island with Delmarva Birding Weekends. "In 20 years, this place could look like Florida birdwise," he said. Previously, brown pelicans, like many Washingtonians, summered on North Carolina's Outer Banks. However, Jim said disruptive storms may have forced the birds to relocate their breeding grounds about 130 miles up the East Coast. Nesting brown pelicans, the smallest of the 8 species, were first documented on Chincoteague Bay near the Assateague Island in 1987. Since then, the once-endangered birds, DDT, the toxic insecticide banned in 1972, was a culprit, have formed robust colonies in the central and lower sections of the bay. Their numbers have rocketed from about 60 pairs in the early 1990s to more than 2,500 couples today. There's no better real estate on the Chesapeake than on this estuary. There are no land predators and loads of fish, said Jim, who once assisted scientists in banding 1,600 pelicans in an afternoon. The Chesapeake has become a pelican factory, he said. During winters down south, brown pelicans have as many responsibilities as Florida spring breakers. However, for their roughly 6 months in the mid-Atlantic, the birds are all business, mating, building nests, laying and incubating eggs, teaching their offspring life skills, securing the future of their species. The bulk of these activities take place in rookeries that are often inaccessible to the flightless or boatless. On Smith Island, resident watermen such as Wes will scoot visitors over to the colonies during the high tide when their vessels can inch close to the action. Delmarva Birding also organizes day-long excursions during peak weeks. The fee covers all water transportation, including the round-trip ride from Crisfield, Maryland to Smith Island, plus a crab cake lunch with a slice of pinstripe Smith Island cake, Maryland's official dessert. On a Thursday morning, with ponderous clouds and rumbling thunder, our group boarded the Barbara Ann II from Crisfield. Captain John Asanovich was at the helm, and his first mate, Barry Chu, was everywhere else. zipping the plastic flaps when the rain started to fall, wiping off the wet seats when the sun peeked out, and chasing a fly that had hitched a ride onto the island. Our group's primary motive was to see the brown pelicans, but we still jumped up or at least cocked our heads whenever Jim pointed out a flying object. "There's a glossy ibis," he exclaimed, following by a tricolored heron, a night heron, another glossy ibis, and snowy egret, also two bald eagles, an osprey, and great black-backed gull, the largest member of the gull family. "Pelican behind us," Jim called out excitedly. I came late to the party. I was deep in the Audubon Bird Group app trying to learn the difference between egrets and herons, but looked up in time to see a little splash marking the pelican's entrance to the live fish market. Seconds later, it burst through the waves, a winged gesture among graceful acrobats. "They have a massive beak and a slow wing beat," Jim said, "but they can turn into a torpedo in the water." The pelican sightings became more frequent as we neared Ewell, the largest of Smith Island's three villages. Barbara Ann chugged past a jetty, heavily occupied by pelicans standing around like teens outside a Starbucks. Jim explained that these birds were juveniles, too young to start their own families, but too old to pal around with their parents. "They're just hanging out," he said, "or learning adult skills like nest building." We docked in Ewell, and after a quick stop at the Smith Island Cultural Center, walked along a road that was light on car and golf cart traffic, but heavy on bird jams. More than half the main island is salt marsh, with the knee-high cordgrass and black needle rush seemingly stretched to the earth's curve. Jim peered into the distance and trained his 10x magnification binoculars on a yellow-crowned night heron with plumes that fluttered down its like ribbons. A seaside sparrow with mustard-colored smears on its face flew by. "They're mainly found in salt marsh," he said. "They're not as charismatic as pelicans." As if on cue, a pelican banked around a curve and plunged into the water. The bird was probably fishing for its mate, who was stuck at home patiently waiting for Junior's shell to crack. In June and early July, the rookery would typically resemble a nursery overrun with featherless black-skinned newborns with pterodactyl features, or weeks-old hatchlings with heart-shaped brown patches on their backs. However, a Mother's Day storm had wiped out the nest around Smith Island. The birds left Rum Point, a recurrent breeding site, and the ones on South Point Marsh in Virginia, a few miles from Tylerton, started over, several weeks behind schedule. They lay eggs in May, and incubation takes 28 to 32 days. The babies can't fly until they're 75 days old, Jim said. If you do the math, we could have baby birds maybe till October. In Tylerton, our group piled into three skiffs, captained by islanders who could read the private thoughts of the sea and sky. I claimed the co-pilot seat next to Wes, who was clearly intrigued, if not smitten, by the pelicans. Before we set off for the colony, he told me that he had previously dropped by the library to further his education on pelicans. Unfortunately, he found only a short paragraph about their nesting behaviors. His daughter searched for information online and learned about a membrane, or third eyelid, that protects the bird's peepers in flight and on fishing expeditions. She shared the discovery with her dad, who passed it along to his passengers. "I thought they were just another bird," he said, "but later on I got interested in them, especially when I started bringing people out to see them." Wes piloted the boat across the Maryland state line and into Virginia and rounded a bend partially obscuring the rookery on Chesapeake Bay Foundation land. "You can smell them before you see them," Jim said. "Enjoy the show." I switched my breathing from nose to mouth and settled in for the spectacle. The boats parked within close range of a scrubby berm dotted with nests and white-capped heads of pelicans, warming their eggs between their webbed feet. Incoming birds landed on the beach with blades of grass dangling from their beaks like cigarettes. Behind us, pelicans cooled off in the water. The rookery was mainly populated by adults, with a few youngsters in the mix. "See those real dark birds?" West asked, pointing at what looked like chocolate-dipped pelicans. "They're last year's babies." The pelicans also intermingled with other colonial nesting birds, including herrings and great black-backed gulls. The double-crested cormorants, which had set up maternity ward behind the pelicans, were also relatively new to the area. "I've been out here a bunch of times and still ask myself, am I really on the eastern shore?" Jim said. For a moment, we forgot about the pelicans as we watched a floofy gull chick hobble down the beach and stand apprehensively on the water's edge. Its parents, bobbing on the waves, squawked encouragement. The baby took one tentative step, then another, and was soon floating towards its life coaches. Our boat erupted in quiet cheers. Soon it would be the pelican chick's turn. Better late than never. Now, if you'd like to consider going to Smith Island, there are some tips that Andrea Sachs has included with her story, such as where to stay, and we start with the Smith Island Inn. It's on Caleb Jones Road in Ewell, Maryland, and you can check them out at smithislandinn.com. That's smithislandinn.com. The Smith Island Inn rents three rooms in a restored Eastern Shore farmhouse plus cottages within walking distance of the main dock and the Smith Island Cultural Center. Guests have free use of canoes, kayaks, and bikes. The inn provides a list of activities and local tour guides, such as Wes Bradshaw, who takes visitors out on his boat to see the pelicans. The price is $30 an hour. Restaurants close at 4 p.m. Guests can pre-order dinner for $45 a person, which includes an entree, crab cakes, for example, sides, bread, and a dessert choice of Smith Island cake or apple crunch pie. And the rates at the inn from $130 a night, including breakfast. Now, as far as things to do, there's the Delmarva Birding Weekends, and you can learn more about that at delmarvabirding.com. Delmarva is D-E-L-M-A-R-V-A, DelmarvaBirding.com. The Maryland-based tour operator offers birding excursions around the Chesapeake Bay, such as Smith Island Pelican Tours, which are held throughout June. Jim Rapp, who organizes and leads the outings, could add more dates for July so visitors can see the chicks, which have not yet hatched. And again, this was written about a year ago. The all-day tour costs $325 per person and includes round-trip transportation from Chrisfield, Maryland to Smith Island, skiff excursion to the nesting colony, crab cake and Smith Island cake lunch at Drum Point Market, admission to the culture center, and a bird guide. So lots to do there, right there at Smith Island. Well, we're going to return to Smith Island a year later now, as writer Justin Juvenal tells us that climate change could swamp this island, but home sales are surging. Now, his story appeared in the July 6, 2023 issue of the Washington Post. A photo caption reveals more. Island resident and real estate agent Laura Evans hangs the open flag at the Smith Island Cultural Center. She's shocked at the rapid pace she was selling properties on the island. So that gives you a hint of what we are about to explore as we continue with our study of Smith Island, Maryland. 10 summers ago, Maryland offered to buy residents off this iconic bit of island in the Chesapeake Bay, known for its picturesque watermen's villages, famous cakes, and pyrotechnic sunsets. Hurricane Sandy had damaged homes, and climate change models offered the direst of forecast. Rising waters could virtually wipe it off the map. The four-square-mile archipelago was held up as a national example of what global warming could eventually mean to many more people living in vulnerable areas and a way governments may respond. One article called residents candidates to become the first climate refugees of the contiguous United States. But Smith Islanders rejected leaving, instead organizing to get tens of millions in government funding for infrastructure upgrades and fortifications against the waves. And in recent years, something improbable has trailed in its wake, a real estate boom. More homes have sold on Smith Island in the last 3 years than in the previous 11 combined, according to sales data. Locals see a story of hope. Their efforts to rescue a 400-year-old way of life tied to tide and season are beginning to bear fruit. Many question the doomsday predictions for the island or hope they can find a way to ride out rising waters. Environmentalists see a dangerous kind of denialism. They say Smith Island's long-term survival is doubtful, so the only rational path is retreat. They see the recent interest in the island as part of an unsettling national trend. Studies show more Americans are moving into climate danger zones. Nick Puschel and Stephanie Wattilla live on this knife's edge between hope for renewal and peril from global warming. The couple in their 30s moved to Smith Island last summer, one of the group of newcomers, or new homeowners, I should say. They love island life and wanted to continue it as part of a next generation in place where the median age is 70. But disaster struck as almost as soon as they arrived, a waterspout whipping across the bay slammed into their property. What followed was a year of worry, endless paperwork, battles with an insurance company, and struggle with the dilemma that will define Smith Island's future and that of millions of Americans in cherished places threatened by climate change. Should they stay or go? Wotilla and Puchel lived in the Baltimore suburbs for years, but she always dreamed of living on a sailboat, and he of owning waterfront property. As they scouted real estate listings, they hit upon a marshy plot in the middle of the Chesapeake, Smith Island. Waterfront homes run roughly from $100,000 to $200,000, far less than most spots on the mainland, so it was one of the few places that fit the couple's budget. In comparison, a two-bedroom condo on the water in Annapolis recently sold for $530,000, and a small home near a dock in Shadyside, Maryland, went for $360,000. The island is the last inhabited one in Maryland, not accessible by car, so its isolation was appealing. It takes a windswept 45-minute boat ride skimming across whitecaps to reach its shores. This is a good baby step between society and living in the mountains by yourself, Wotilla quipped. The classic memoir about the place is titled An Island Out of Time. Some residents trace their lineage to the first European settlers in the 1600s. Island Speech features colonial-era relics, and watermen continue the old ritual of steering boats out before dawn to harvest oysters and scrape for soft-shell crabs. Ooh, that's a toughie. Well, the island has a living thread connecting the bay's deep traditions to the present. Wotilla and Puchel found their dream spot in Rhodes Point, one of the three villages that form Smith Island. They purchased a double-wide trailer with a zigzagging dock to park their boats. They could watch the sun rise over the Tangier Sound out of one window and set over the Chesapeake Bay from another window. They settled into life, as it comes here, as native islanders called newcomers. Wotilla became manager of the Smith Island Cultural Center, while Puchel planned to get his captain's license to ferry tourists out on sailboat tours while working a software engineering job that didn't require him to be in the office. They grew to love the old-fashioned rhythms of island life and its ticks. They played bingo in the community hall on Friday nights and had to learn to navigate backwards talk, the local habit of saying the opposite what someone means, as in, I don't care much for you, for I like you. They handed out money to children when they went door-to-door for the Christmas giving. They were hardly alone. Laura Evans, a longtime resident who works as the island's hairdresser, notary, and electoral judge, among other jobs, decided to add one more title in 2021, real estate agent. She said she got her license mainly to help sell older properties that needed cleaning up. She hoped to move one or two a year. But she was stunned when she sold five properties during one of the first weekends she was open for business. She said the pace hasn't slowed. All told, 50 homes on the island have sold since 2020, representing about 20% of the housing stock, according to multiple listing service data. The population of permanent residents on the island is around 240. Buyers include a doctor from Indiana, a retired teacher from Minnesota, and a marine biologist from Florida. Most are part-time residents, but a handful, like Wotilla and Puchel, have taken up island living permanently. They said in interviews they were lured by the uniqueness of the place and felt climate change was an imminent threat to their property. Or few felt that, I should say. Few felt it was. Some said they wanted to experience Smith Island before it possibly disappears. People want to escape the chaos, Evans said. You have that idyllic boat ride over. For 35 to 40 minutes, you can put your mind at ease, relax, and just enjoying being out on the water. Then you reach the island, and it's just such a slow pace of life. Many residents get around by golf cart, so there are a few cars, and restaurants close at 4 p.m. Crime? Virtually non-existent. Some people leave their doors unlocked, and police officers are relegated to the mainland. Evans and others said the newcomers have refreshed old homes and brought new energy and investment. They said there's still a ways to go, but such a turnabout was unthinkable just a few years ago. By the time Hurricane Sandy arrived in 2012, Smith Island had suffered a long decline. The population had dwindled from a peak of around 800 in the 1900s to less than 200, and an economy centered on crabs and oysters was fading. Roads were crumbling and a sewer plant failing. Another threat was also looming, climate change. William Sweet, an oceanographer with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, said the island, which averages a couple of feet above sea level, could see bay winters rise by roughly a foot by 2050, meaning even moderate flooding could send waters sloshing across the land. By 2100, Sweet said, an additional foot of sea level rise is expected, a scenario that could submerge most of the island. Sweet said Smith Island's situation is worse because it is sinking, a process caused by land settling after the last ice age, groundwater pumping, and the compaction of Earth stirred up by an ancient meteor strike. Attitudes vary toward climate science on the island. Some accept the projections, others reject them. Many think the island's population centers will escape the worst-case scenarios based on what they've seen so far. A common refrain from locals is that Smith Island's biggest problem is erosion. With bleak predictions of sea level rise as a backdrop, Maryland officials in 2013 offered buyouts to some island residents following the damage wrought by Sandy. The plan angered and galvanized the majority of natives who felt it could lead to a death spiral for their way of life. If government is buying you out and they're not going to reinvest it, Eddie Somers, who grew up on Smith Island and now lives on the mainland, it's going to kill the culture and the place, he said. Somers and others rallied around the buyouts, which the state dropped, and formed a group called Smith Island United to ensure the island is around 400 years from now. The group mounted a remarkably effective lobbying campaign. Somers is now president. They drew up a vision plan for the island's renewal in 2015 and have doggedly pursued local, state, and federal funding to make it happen in the years since. That includes getting $9 million for a shoreline project protecting the wildlife refuge on the north part of the island, nearly $7 million for jetties to safeguard Rhodes Point, and millions more for roads, docks, sewers, and other upgrades. Somers and others said they once again are optimistic about Smith Island's future. Wesley Bradshaw, a 78-year-old island native and retired waterman, says he's noticed the change. Something's in the wind, Bradshaw said. There's a lot going on this little island. But others are not as optimistic. Mike Tidwell, the founder and director of Chesapeake Climate Action Network, who made a film about Smith Island, said he would like nothing more for the island to survive, but the harsh reality is that it will likely be uninhabitable soon. He says it's time to plan for an exit, not push for more homeowners. Some studies have shown similar trends elsewhere. One found more Americans are moving into hot urban areas and zones prone to wildfires that will be intensified by climate change. Hurricanes have become more devastating in Florida because millions have bought homes in their paths in recent decades. Smith Island is such an iconic place that lingers in the imagination of Maryland as a part of our real Maryland heritage. The idea that it would just disappear and we would raise the white flag is unthinkable for most people, Tidwell said. But if you do the math, the retreat is inevitable. Wotulla knew those predictions better than most. She was an environmental science major at the University of Maryland, Baltimore, County and had spent a class studying Smith Island. She and Pushel said they accept the climate science. Both said they moved to the island fully aware of what its ultimate fate might be. I definitely wanted to experience it while I could, Wotulla said. That's the rate waters will rise. Well, it may be 10 years, maybe 100 years. Hopefully, it will be closer to 100 years, she said. That hope was severely tested on August 4, 2022. The couple had moved into their home just weeks earlier. A brand new washing machine still sat uninstalled in the living room. It was about 7 p.m. when Pushel said he heard the thunder and decided to go back to his dock to shoot photos of the storm clouds. As he reached the front door, Pushel said he yelled. He watched the roof peel off a nearby outbuilding and tumble by. Wotulla hit record on her cell phone and captured the harrowing scene of a waterspout ripping through their backyard. The video begins with another chunk of building slamming into the ground as the wind whistles. Holy expletive deleted, Wotulla yelled. Wotulla and Pushel then retreated into the center of their mobile home and lay on the floor until the twister moved on. When Wotulla looked outside, she realized the home of her 88-year-old neighbor had been decimated by a direct hit. Wotulla and Pushel feared the woman had been killed, so they dashed over as the black funnel still loomed ominously in the distance. They found a stunning scene. The house had been reduced to a heap of jagged boards and insulation, but their neighbor still lay in a bed wearing a nightgown she had put on before turning in. She was shaken, but suffered only a gash on her leg. She probably wouldn't have made it if she was in her kitchen or living room, Pushel said. The tornado continued to tear across the island, damaging 17 homes before spinning off into the bay. Pushel and Watilla soon discovered the extent of the damage to their home. The double-wide trailer cracked in half the days after the tornado. Wind-whipped debris, including a red kayak, had badly damaged its walls. They soon concluded their home was a total loss. More bad news followed. Their insurance company didn't want to reimburse them because of an error in their paperwork. The couple spent months couch surfing in homes across the island as they sought to win payouts for the damage to their home. Eventually, they purchased a camper, and it was floated across the bay on a barge to serve as a temporary residence. But the big question remained, would they stay? On a recent day, Pushel stuck his hand through a hole in the corner of the double-wide trailer punched by the twister. Behind it, the last section of their neighbor's home was collapsing on a concrete pad. The woman had moved to her nursing home on the mainland. Watilla pointed out tomato seedlings that she had hoped to plant but still set in black trays. The salty bay water seeping into their front yard would kill them. Almost nothing had gone according to plan during the couple's first year on Smith Island. They fully believed climate change might one day force their exodus, but despite all the setbacks, they said they gave only fleeting consideration to leaving. They had grown attached. Watilla said they had found something that outweighed all the risk, a home. They had made connections with the community and lived in a kind of paradise. Kayaking, fishing, and trails were directly out their front door. Watilla understood it might seem irrational to others. The couple got about $90,000 in payouts to rebuild their home. It was less than they needed, but they planned to defray the cost by doing some of the construction themselves. They hope to start in the next several months. Other Smith Islanders raised money through GoFundMe to rebuild their homes. Watilla, Pushel, and others on the island want to hold on to this place as long as they can, because there is no other like it. Everywhere you look here is absolutely beautiful, Watilla said. Everyone here is so nice. There's no crime. Everyone is going to come out to help you. When you go to the mainland, you don't have that, she said. And by the way, Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, offers some history about Smith Island, citing excerpts from what is known as the Federal Writers Project Part 3, Touring the State, Maryland, a guide to the Old Line State, published in 1940. And it says the island was charted by John Smith. British settlers arrived on the island in the 17th century, arriving from Cornwall, Wales, and Dorset, England, via Virginia. The island's population, as we reported earlier, peaked at 800 in the 1900s. Smith Island is inhabited by one of the region's oldest English-speaking communities, which is known for its relic accent, preserving speech patterns from the original English colonial settlers, much like our Outer Banks has. The local dialect is the dialects of the West Country of England, including Cornwall. The dialect contains some relic features indicative of its origins. And that, my friend, brings us to the end of today's journey on Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And I remind you, the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Any comments or questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.